Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish, and we're going to be talking about the return of the giants. Now, those of you who haven't heard the story before, Barry's written a book about this because between about 1987 and so about 1989, there were a number of UFO sightings in Israel. And it was about the time of the Oslo Accord. There were a lot of strange things going on that just didn't make sense. And, of course, if you look at things from a material point of view, why, of course, there's just no way you can understand what is really going on. But is it possible that there is another dimension, that there's a mystical element somewhere there that's responsible for these things happening? Is it possible that besides the physical world, there's a psychical world? Is it possible there's another dimension, a supernatural dimension, that we cannot understand because we're finite human beings? Well, I think that you'll find Barry's story fascinating as he explores what he found, what he investigated, the return of the giants. Barry, go right ahead.
Sure. I'd like to pick up where we left off last time. We didn't finish the story from the Etzitz. A moshav, well, it was 10 miles from where I lived in Beit Shemesh. If there are continuing listeners, last time we were cut off, and here is the end of that story before we go on. As you recall, maybe, Yitzit was the story of Danny Ezra and Hetzel Constantini, who was the security chief for the community. They were playing cards in Danny's house when the house shook, and really shook. And Herzl thought it was a truck passing by, but this is an obscure village without a road to even handle it, a truck that big, some sort of 32-wheeler or something. So he opened the door, and in front of him was a 9-foot, what he called a robotic statue, with its face covered in some, what he called, a metallic haze. And, well, he tells his friend Danny to look out. He slams the door on this thing, of course, and tells his friend Danny to look at the blinds, and Danny sees this monster, and it's like a comedy movie. Danny faints, and he's revived by Herzl, who phones the police, and the police naturally are not going to send anyone to see a 9-foot monster. I mean, it's not exactly the kind of phone call police respond well to, but Herzl explained who he was, and he was the town security chief, and he had an army rank, and they came. And when they got there, they found tracks, deep tracks. I went the next day. It was all over the news, by the way. I hear music already.
Go right ahead. I'll tell you when to cut off.
All right. I went to Yitzhak the next day with my kids. They were tiny little kids, just to step in these tracks. The tracks, well, they were, I guess, walking on tippy toes, because at the sole, it was, 9 inches. Deep, 10 inches deep. At the heel, it was 3 or 4.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Barry Shamish, who is certainly an Israeli patriot who was more or less forced to come to the United States because of threats against his life. He's been here for quite some time. He's written a number of books, which are available, and he'll tell you later on how you can get hold of the books. He's very well known in Israel. In fact, he's very well known throughout the world. So we're lucky to have him here on the Radio Liberty as a regular guest. And he's telling us the story of the return of the giants, because there was basically a period in Israel somewhere about 1987 to 1999 where there were a number of supernatural sightings. I mean, people actually saw giants. They saw unidentified flying objects. And, of course, Barry has DVDs that show you a lot of these UFOs that certainly pictures were taken of. They're not imaginary. They're really very real. There are a number of television programs that were done in this country based upon Barry's work. But Barry's simply telling you the story of what happened one evening when a fellow, you know, at home in a small town not too far from where Barry lived, heard the whole building shook. He and a friend were playing cards. Looked out the door, and here's a 7-foot metallic giant.
9-foot.
9-foot, I'm sorry. 9-foot, a giant. And of course, he reports this to police. They come out. They find footprints. Barry goes there a couple of days, a day or two later, and basically, these footprints are about 4 inch deep in the heel and about 9 inches deep. And, of course, these are actually pictures they're taken of it. The police evaluated. So what happens when you find these footprints? How long were these footprints?
Well, they went for 8.5 kilometers.
I mean, but how long? I mean, was it a foot long?
I stuck my shoe in there, and it fit perfectly.
Okay, fine.
First of all, they went for 8.5 kilometers. Okay, let's start with that little problem. They ended up at a community called Keren Shalom. All this happened, by the way, in December, late December of 1994, when the giant sightings of Yitzhak were a year old. In came Yitzhak. Now, as I said, I took my kids just to put their little feet inside these footprints. Now, I took a few film crews there, but in the same winter, the sightings crew, this I believe was on NBC, the sightings show, in March of that year, the footprints were very, very visible still. And
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back. Well, Barry's just saying, of course, that the footprints there outside the home were visible for quite some time afterwards. And a television crew came from the United States from a television program called The Sightings. And certainly Barry was the consultant for a number of actual films that they took. And then, of course, they produced a number of programs. Well, there are about 4 programs they made based upon your work.
5, actually.
5, okay. So you pick up the story there. The film crew comes from the United States. They're going to get pictures, and what happens?
Well, I asked them to just film my shoes as I jumped as high as I could to get into the ground. I didn't even get a millimeter into the ground. This was very, very dense clay. They estimated for anything to dig prints that deep into the ground, I would have had to have weighed a ton. And that's no exaggeration, a ton. I went the next day before it really got big, and already there was an ice cream truck there. This is my my image of the UFO phenomenon, that once something tremendous happened, the ice cream truck would show up to feed the people who want to see it. I went there and I met Herzl the next day, and he showed me the tracks. I followed the tracks. And, I mean, whatever this thing was, sometimes the footprints were normal human gait, and then there would be a gap of 12 feet, and then occasionally there would be a third print, but it would be round. I guess this was some sort of cane, walking stick, and other people agreed that that would have been the explanation why it would need a walking stick. No one had an answer for that, but occasionally there was a third print. In short, this thing must have floated 12 feet at times, just taken a running hop of 12 feet. And these were extremely weird prints. Now, while I was there, I met the family. It was Itzik and Yechiel Sadon. That was their name. Young kids, 111, 113, who filmed the UFO the night before. I've got it on film. I've got a DVD where I actually have this thing on film. Now, the story they told me was downright weird. Apparently, their dog was barking like crazy, and you can hear the dog on the film. And then suddenly, a flash of burning, a beam, just, the dog had a doghouse on the patio beside a sofa. It burnt up. Something from the sky burnt up the doghouse. I took pictures of it. I took examples of what was left of the sofa, of burnt foam rubber. How do you describe it? It was flat. It was black and flat where this beam hit. I took that for later analysis, and I took the film. This, you can't ask for more physical evidence of something very strange happening in this town. Now, what happened is the Israeli people wanted an explanation. And the police, of course, did arrive that night, but they had no, you know, they thought it was a terror attack, which unfortunately is not an uncommon occurrence in Israel, but obviously no terrorists. Leaves 8.5 kilometers of impossible tracks in the ground, and they just didn't have an explanation. What they did is they brought in the spokesman for the Israeli, the exact Nature Reserves Authority. That's what it was. They brought in a spokesman to look at the tracks. And deal with the press. People want to know what made those tracks. Now, this spokesman for the Nature Reserves Authority declared that it was the first one was a camel. He decided it was a camel. And it was pointed out to him it would have had to have been a two-legged floating camel. And he said, all right, it was a camel, it was an antelope. And they said, well, an antelope that carried a walking stick. And finally, he said something quite remarkable. He said, for all I know, it was something from outer space. I have no idea what made these tracks. Now, in the end, Israel police had to give some sort of report. And there were a lot of people who wanted the report. And here is the official police version of what made those tracks, not to mention the kids' UFO, and not to mention the burning doghouse and all the strange things that happened that night. They decided it was a cult that did it. A very, very strange cult. Well, I want to join this cult. Look what you get to do in this cult. You get to dress as giants, scare the town sheriff till his friend faints in front of him, and then walk around for 8.5 kilometers making tracks that a one-ton machine could make. A great cult, I'll tell you. What its purpose was and who were members of it, they never mentioned, but that was the final police report, that a cult made the tracks. And that is the very... Oh, and by the way, we, and that was the Israeli UFO community, which in 94 was very, very active, made plaster casts of the footprints, and boy, nothing human ever made plaster cast like what came out of those prints. In short, the Yatsis giant sighting was incredibly well documented, well filmed. Now, something very strange happened to Herschel Constantini, which I write about in my book, Return of the Giants. He showed me medical documents. The night that he saw this creature, his gonads blew up, well, his right gonad blew up like a balloon. And he went to the local clinic, and they didn't really have a good explanation for this, but they gave him a lot of antibiotics, and he showed me the clinic's report. I don't know what that means. I don't know everything, but his right gonad blew up like a balloon.
All right, well, it's an amazing, amazing story, and so did that pretty well end at least that sighting?
Well, it never happened again, if you mean that.
All right, now, what's the next story then? Because, of course, you were on top of this series of events. It wasn't just one or two, but it was a number of separate events, of separate strange sightings of either beings or of unidentified flying objects.
This wasn't just sightings. These are unique in the world. The Israeli, for lack of a better term, UFO wave, I don't even know if that's a good terminology for what went on. However, let's go back in time to the very beginning of the wave. The incident that heralded the 13 years of impossible sightings in Israel was the one outside of Haifa on, believe it was September 23rd, 1987, it was a day or two before Yom Kippur, that Ali Akai, who was a car mechanic, simple guy, was driving from the south to his home just north of Haifa. Just south of Haifa is Shikmona Beach. He saw, well, he described it as a balloon in the sky, wavering. He'd never seen a balloon in the sky wavering before, so he stopped his car. And, this balloon beamed something onto the beach below and then took off. His entire experience lasted 15 seconds. And he ran across the street to the garage, and he was the sole witness. Within a couple of days, he went to the police. He couldn't understand what he had seen, and they gave him the phone number. Way back then, there was one UFO expert in Israel, Hadassah Arbel, the pioneer of this subject, and they went together down to Shikmona Beach. And were astounded to find the banana-shaped capsule, whatever the thing he saw. Usually when they're banana-shaped, they're only looking at the side, that it's in fact a disc, and they're only seeing the side view of it. But there it was, burnt into the sands of Shikmona Beach, a 15 meter by 6 meter image of the craft, and there is much more, and we'll get to it after the break.
All right, fine. Chris Barry Shamish is describing the events that took place in Israel, strange and unexplainable events, and of course they were there for a decade, and then they suddenly stopped, and there's not been anything like it again, has there, Barry?
Well, the UFO community was destroyed by the Israeli media, and you know what? It stopped in 99 for all intents and purposes.
Okay, fine. And so this is, we've seen other episodes in other parts of the world where there's been a lot of this supernatural activity, and then it's there for a time, and it disappears. Same thing happened in Israel in 1999. Barry, go right ahead. Pick the story up.
Oh, no. Israel's events are like are not like any other country's events. And Israel's a very small country, and the neighbors didn't have these events. They weren't having strange UFO events in Lebanon or Syria, and I went looking for it. It was over Israel for whatever reason. It was only happening in Israel. But let's go back to Shikmona Beach. They find burnt into the sand the profile of the ship. And 15 meters long, 6 meters high. And in the right-hand corner of the ship was where there was no burning, there was vegetation in clear profile was a dashboard and apparently a being, driving the ship, flying the ship. But there it was. And many pictures have been taken, and they're in my book about this craft. And the being was sitting down, 3.5 feet tall is what they estimated his height, standing up would have been. There it was. You had a picture, an actual picture burnt into the, in this case, not burnt in the sand, this was the unburned part of the sand of whatever flew this object. Once again, front page news in Israel. Don't think this is like marginal. This is front page news. So lo and behold, in comes the ice cream truck. They estimated that 10,000 people showed up at the site the day after the newspapers reported on this burnt, I don't know what you would call it. It's not a crop circle. It's an image in the sand. Shirley MacLaine flew there to see it. It was a world famous event. Now, Ami Akrai, I met him several times. He has a very, very strange reaction, which I won't dive into. Get my book, and it's in great detail, his strange reaction. But what I did was a lot more scientific. Now, at Shikmona Beach, very interesting site, Shikmona Beach, there's a marine biology lab, three-story building, serious place, research lab. At Shikmona Beach, there are ancient artifacts, perfect circles of about 15 meters diameter, made out of stone, along with remnants of what once must have been some sort of settlement of some kind, but I couldn't understand the perfect circle made out of stone. So I went to the marine biology lab on a guest, and I asked them to please explain what these ruins were and what was that circle. And the scientist tells me the circle was once a mikveh, a ritual bath. And I said, why would they build a mikveh next to the ocean? I said, you just go in the ocean, you've got a mikveh.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Barry was telling us about this event. This fellow sees something looks like a banana, a large banana. And it sort of goes down on the beach, and eventually some fellow from a UFO organization goes there. They go there together, and they're burned into the sand. It's this 15-meter-long replica and about 9 feet, 3 millimeters high, 4 millimeters high. What was about 9 feet?
Not millimeters.
Meters. Meters, right. So it's a great big thing, and they even get the sort of the element of all they see is the burnt image of perhaps somebody sitting there driving this sort of thing. This becomes something people want to come to see, and a lot of Israelis come to see this thing there in the sand. hand, the pictures, you know, it's very obvious something is there. Something's created this image in the sand. And then Barry says that, of course, this is a very famous beach because there's some sort of an institute there, and they're studying a lot of relics, and there's something almost looks like that, but it's been around for thousands of years. It's some sort of a great big round something or other. It's about 45 feet wide.
Yeah. That sounds right.
And so Barry says, you know, ask the scientist, is there what it is? The guy says it's a ceremonial bath. And Barry says, but why would you, you know, have a ceremonial bath right next to the ocean? You want to have a ceremony, you just go in the ocean. Pick the story up there.
Well, he said there was an earthquake and that the ocean was once quite a ways away. And believe me, it wasn't quite a ways away. It really 30 feet away. It wasn't a good explanation at all for this ruin. And it was the Marine Biological Institute. They were actually studying fish and wildlife. But neither here nor there. I took pictures of the site where the landing was, right beside these ruins. But here's the biblical connection to Shikmona Beach, and a lot of people I showed, Elijah's cave, it's, I guess you climb up, there's a bluff, and you climb to the top of the bluff overlooking Shikmona Beach, and there is, oh, I guess 150 yards away from the landing site. Is Elijah's cave. Now, this cave is 2,400 years old. There's a shrine built on top of it. The biblical story is that Elijah challenges the Canaanites to a duel of the gods, and he tells them his god can burn a bull with one beam of light, and the Canaanites take his dare, and they tether a bull, and they do prayers, and they wait all night, and nothing. The bull is just fine. Now it's Elijah's turn, and he tethers a bull, and he sprinkles water on it, and whatever, a beam of light turns the bull into dinner automatically. And on the site of this biblical miracle is Elijah's cave. Now, a German filmmaker named Michael Heseman went into the cave, and lo and behold, 2,400 years later, we look at Alta. It was just a dead ringer on the wall for Ami's burnt sand image. It was it. I mean, what was it doing there? It didn't look like anything. And, you know, really quite feasibly, the ray of light that Ami Akrai saw may have been the same ray of light that burnt the bull or that Elijah saw. Now, I took the sightings crew, and I took another crew from Finland once, and they said the same thing. The sightings crew said, oh, it could be a bat. I said, well, it doesn't look like a bat. They said it could be anything. It doesn't have to be the same image. And Michael said, just stuck to his guns and just said outright that it was the same image.
In other words, this is the image on the wall of the cave that was burned in the sand.
The same as the one on the sand.
Right, right. So basically, there's some strange, mysterious things going on, and there's no logical explanation for any of these stories if you're looking at it from a logical point of view.
And it gets weirder.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Barry Samus as he takes us into more of these incredible stories that he tells in his book, The Return of the Giants. We'll be back here in just a moment.
from the mountain to the prairie, to the ocean white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
And, of course, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Kate Smith, and we're talking about, of course, the return of the Giants, an amazing story. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamus as he brings us more of this incredible story as things get stranger and stranger. And when you're looking for a material explanation for something which is truly mystical, you're going to get into all sorts of problems. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest Barry Shamus. We're talking about his book, The Return of the Giants. But before we go on, Barry, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your book, The Return of the Giants, and your other books, get your DVDs, which you offer, and how, of course, if they would like to invite you to come to their area to give a talk, why they could contact you.
Well, the book is called Return of the Giants, and it's found at lulu.com. You go www.lulu.com. There's a search box. Click books and then write in my name. C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's Shamus. It's in two versions. The color version is a lot more impressive, but it's expensive. But you can download it for $5. The black and white version, the pictures don't come out as well, and it's not expensive. My website, which, by the way, is political, not all that much about the Giants, but it's still BarryChamish.com. I have a DVD with all kinds of, UFOs, 25 of them probably, stuff you've never seen before, as well as TV shows. And I'm gonna give you a phone number, but I'm going to put in a very strange plug. The phone number for the DVD is 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. Also phone me. I've got a real problem with AT&T. They are blocking my writing. And I managed to get it out. I found a clever way to get an article out today. And I asked for a lawyer, a constitutional lawyer, to put a stop to this. If you have any issues with AT&T, if you find that your emails have been blocked for no reason, and by the way, experts have been now pitching in, I'm blocked because they don't like the context, the content of my emails. They actually trace this for me. Content is stopping my emails from going out on AT&T. If you want to join in the lawsuit or you are a constitutional attorney, my number again is 904-315-8079. For me, it's my living. For other people, maybe you're just outraged that your freedom of expression and speech is being determined by AT&T. All right, now we get back to what made the mark. So the sightings crew arrives and does their interviews, and Avi has got all kinds of material from the actual image on the sand. He saved it, and he gave it to sightings who had two physicists test. Well, they did the full range of tests. You have, of course, material not from the image. Then you have material from a different place altogether. And all in all, where the site was, where the soil seemed to have melted and turned black, what they found, and this, of course, was broadcast, but I actually have the report, that there was a low-melting hydrocarbon on the sands. It melted in front of their cameras. They used a strong light to take a picture of this material, and it melted in front of, when the light was turned on, its melting point, again, was 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Whatever that vehicle, craft, whatever it put on Chicmona Beach to paint itself, and by the way, why do that? You know, that's a separate question. How did they know anyone would ever see it? And quite frankly, maybe it was just a technical problem. They have no idea why they actually blasted their image on the sand, but that's how they did it. They did it by putting a low-melting hydrocarbon in the shape of their craft onto the sands of Chicmona Beach.
Okay, well, it's incredible. What else? Anything else happened with that story, or do we go?
Oh, we just started.
You go right ahead.
All right. Now, what happened afterwards continues the saga of Chicmona Beach. There were two more incidents there. On June 6th of 1988, about 8 months later, one Nava Navi was walking along the beach at night, same thing as Ami Akrai. She sees a craft, and she sees a beam of light, and she tells the police, and the next day, lo and behold, we have another image burnt into the sands of Chicmona Beach. This one did not have an image of a dashboard. And again, maybe because there wasn't vegetation, there's whatever, hers didn't have the pilot. But other than that, same dimensions. Oh, you know, I've got a cell phone really interrupting me, and I'm going to put a stop to it right now. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Go right ahead, Barry.
All righty. So on the beaches of Chicmona Beach, there is now a second image burnt into the beaches of Chicmona Beach. A second one. One wasn't good enough for them. They had to do it again. But if that wasn't enough, and again, why Chicmona Beach? This was 50 yards from Ami's image. That's all it was, 50 yards away. And then 6 months later, in December of 88, two teenage lovers, I think, I mean, what are you doing on a beach together? Whatever, in the middle of the night, Ida Biederman and Aloni Lott are on the beach together when a craft, flies overhead, and lo and behold, it explodes. It explodes into thousands of pieces. They tell the police the next day, the whole UFO community descended on the beach. There were shards that seemed to be hot, even in the water. They were, even in the Mediterranean, they seemed to have been very hot, but they were cold to the touch. And when you picked one up, they turned into dust. The person, well, his name was Avi Greif. He was a UFO person in Haifa. He brought in Professor Sharvit of the Technion Institute, and they took these shards, and he conducted whatever tests you do on a shard like this, and he declared that they were made of magnesium. For some reason, a craft exploded in midair. Thousands of pieces of magnesium fell on Shikmona Beach. What that means, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the significance for any of this.
All right. Well, you're a storyteller, and of course, maybe somebody out there in the audience will have some ideas, but right now, I just want you to tell the story, because I think it's a fascinating story.
That's the story in short of Shikmona Beach.
Okay.
That in a period of a year and a half, there were two images made, and one exploding UFO that exploded into thousands of pieces of magnesium.
And of course, people are going to investigate. They're going to try to come up with a logical explanation, but there isn't a logical explanation. So pick up the story from there.
All right. Let's go forward in time to the next story. There's no logical sequence to the UFO stories in Israel. You have to understand that people saw UFOs by the hundreds of thousands. I've got pictures in the book of cars pulled off the main Tel Aviv highway near Herzliya, all to look at a UFO hovering above them. Each incident is very different than the other incident. It's very hard to generalize here. But the amount of evidence the veracity of the witnesses makes this absolutely undeniable. This is not a way out story. This is an actual story of life in Israel from 87 to 99. I'm now going to go to December 6th of 1991. When you want to talk veracity, we've got the police chief of a major town in Israel, Beit Shan, chasing a UFO for 2.5 hours, along with at least 300 soldiers. And this is a very famous story in Israel. In fact, I was serving the army at the time and had a semi-reputation for following this stuff by then, and people said mockingly, "Did you hear about the UFO in Beit Shan?" And I said to him, "What was it?" It was front page news. You have to understand, this was front page. You know what? This, I remember the picture of Yitzchak Mordechai, the police chief of Beit Shan, in the middle of, I think it was Mariv. So I said, "Well, what was it? You had the police chief of Beit Shan, and you had 300 soldiers chasing this thing for 2.5 hours. What were they chasing?" And I remember this soldier who was trying to mock me. He suddenly turned very serious, and he said, "I don't know." I don't know what it was. Look, here's what happened on December 6th of 1991. It began with someone named Yossi Ben Maoz, who was driving from Haifa through the Jezreel Valley on the way home. At 3 in the morning, he's in a taxi, and he sees a craft following them on his right. They drive along towards Beit Shan, where, as far as he can tell, it's got to be a terrorist glider. I mean, this is the first response of the Israelis to sighting these crafts. It's got to be terrorists. Which, by the way, is a very logical... You wouldn't get that in America. But that's the first reaction of Israelis. Now, this craft, which, again, he describes as a banana, that seems to... Again, if it's low enough and you're looking at a disc from the side... It'll look like a banana. The craft stops and hovers above the Beit Shan Industrial Park, and it stops moving. Yossi gets out, finds a public telephone, phones the police, and the first cop, he just says, look out the window of the industrial park. The first cop looks out, and he sees this craft hovering above industrial park. It's not a very big town, Beit Shan. You can see it from the police station. He phones Yitzchak Mordechai at, 3:15 in the morning. Mordechai does the same thing. He looks outside. He sees the craft. He phones the Air Force. Nearby to Beit Shan is the Ramat David Air Force Base, a place I served in, and the Army comes out. The kibbutzim in the region, their security is put on high alert. Border guards come out. Suddenly there is a convoy in jeeps, mostly in jeeps. There are normal cars, there are jeeps following this craft. The craft takes off, and 300 mostly armed Israelis follow it right to the Jordanian border, which isn't very far away from Beit Shan. And somehow the craft turns back at the border. They can't go on from the border. They can't go to Jordan. Now, for years, I thought the craft knew where the border was. And then I met Yitzchak Mordechai and had a long talk with him about the night. And he says, no, you got it wrong. I think the craft saw that we all stopped at the Jordanian border and knew it couldn't go on for some reason, that we couldn't go on, so it turned back. It was leading them. He said that the craft was just curious. It was leading them on a cat and mouse chase. Eventually, the craft led 300, remember, these are a lot of witnesses. These are officers of the IDF. They're officers of the Air Force, which should know what's in their skies. Following this device, this craft, whatever it is, call it a UFO because it was unidentified. And by the way, the police report authored by Yitzchak Mordechai was very honest. He wrote... It was a UFO incident. He did it very honestly. It was a UFO incident. It hovers above Kibbutz Maoz Chaim. And finally, the sun rises. And they can see this thing in front of their eyes. And a soldier, this is a famous story, a soldier takes out his rifle like it's going to make a difference. And he asks permission to shoot at it. They can finally see it. It's not a banana, it's a disc. And he asked permission to try and shoot it down, and Mordechai tells him to leave it alone. It hasn't shot at us. Why should we shoot at it? Yitzchak Mordechai, by the way, was a very, very good cop. Very calm-headed, And he led this chase, and they did it very rationally, and there was no gunfire when there was no need for gunfire, and you had a lot of armed men who would have loved to have shot at this thing, and his order was not to touch it. It didn't harm us, and we're not going to harm it, and that's that. That's the story of the Beit Shan UFO as seen by 300 armed Israelis.
Well, there are things that we really don't understand, and that certainly until we recognize the fact that there seems to be another dimension, there seems to be mystical or psychical things out there, why, we're going to be totally puzzled by what's going on, but perhaps we can come up with an explanation. But not right now. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Yeah, I think in this case, there's no way of starting another incident. So I'm going to remind that the name of my book is Return of the Giants. It's available at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. You'll see a search box. You click in books, and then you write my name. C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That'll take you to all my books. This is sold in color and black and white. Color is a lot more impressive, but more expensive. And black and white is a lot cheaper. My website, which doesn't have a lot of but Return of the Giants on it, it's more political, but still, it's BarryChamish.com. To get my DVD, what's it going to cost you? $12. It's not an expensive DVD. You phone me at 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. And finally, AT&T is not allowing... They're actually surveilling my writing, and I've caught them hands down. I had a technician in. If you are a constitutional lawyer, or you feel in some way that you can't get your emails out, and it's an insult to your basic rights of free expression, phone me at that number, and we'll try and do something about this. Constitutional lawyer, you're working pro bono. And I'll repeat the number one more time. This is an incident that bothers me terribly. I left Israel because things were getting hairy there, and I don't want it to start again in America, my goodness. 904-315-8079, 904-315-8079 for the DVDs, and if you can help me on this issue. There, I finished.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate so much, and I hope that you'll be back with us in a week or two as we continue exploring the Return of the Giants, because I think that what we have to do is get people to realize that these things are not imaginary. They're real. There's a lot of disinformation being put out. There's an organized effort on the part of some people at the very highest levels of our government, and I'm sure the Israeli government as well, because I think all the governments work together, to confuse people about the mystical, the psychic, the supernatural. Barry, God bless. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You betcha. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we do hope you enjoyed Barry Shamish, and you'll want to get his book and get his DVD. DVD's inexpensive, but it's got certainly a lot of clips from this television program, The Sightings, and you'll get to see Barry, and he did a pretty good job on these programs. Now, is there a supernatural element? Absolutely. You can't understand anything going on today unless you understand the supernatural. We have a 4-tape set on the supernatural. We carry a book called The Beautiful Side of Evil by Joanna Michelson, who's come to be a personal friend of ours. And Joanna, though for several years, was involved in the occult, in mystical healing. She saw 400 supernatural healings. People actually cured of cancer and blindness and just about everything imaginable. I mean, you could not imagine these things happening, and you couldn't imagine her story. Joanna Michelson has an amazing story which everybody needs to hear and, of course, or read. And you can read it in the form of the Beautiful Side of Evil, or you can hear her tell this story in the four-tape set on the supernatural. We carry a book, certainly, going on to satanic crimes. There really are satanic crimes being carried out in the world today, and everything is done to cover this up. They do not want people to understand that there are satanic covens working right here in our government at every level. They interlock with satanic covens working at the highest level of our government. And the ultimate goal of all of these movements, whether it be the Satanists or the witchcraft or the secret societies or the Lucis Trust or the Luciferians or the Gnostics or the Masons or the Theosophists or the Rosicrucians or so many of the organizations we discuss in my book, the Brotherhood of Darkness, the ultimate goal is a world government. And you go back and you read the writings of H.G. Wells, and he will tell you that you have to have a one-world currency, a one-world economic system, before you could have a one-world government, and that is why they're working to destroy our economy and working to destroy our financial system and impoverish the American people as a stepping stone to the coming world government. And if you think that they're really trying to solve the economic problems of our country, then of course you're going to get into very difficult problems, and you're going to do what's logical at this time in this history of our nation, and you're probably going to end up losing everything you've spent your whole life working for. You need to get my talk on the financial Armageddon. That's the financial Armageddon. My talk on the forbidden secret. My talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness of the book. And, of course, there's syllabuses that go with the other two talks. The information we have at RadioLiberty.com. We have a four-tape or four-CD set on satanic crimes. We have, certainly, the book, Diary of a Devil Hunter. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do you understand what's going on today? Well, we're fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, cultural, financial battlefield. And until you understand that you have to look at everything through the prism of biblical prophecy, until you have to look at everything through the prism of the Bible and the scriptures, why you're not going to be able to understand anything going on today, or why so many of these events in Israel took place close to Elijah's cave. And when you begin thinking about it, it all begins fitting together. Let me suggest an excellent series we have. It's called The Final Countdown by Pastor Billy Crone. Lots of videos, biblical scriptures, and of course the sermon there. That's the Final Countdown series, and then of course we have a new one. We've started with Pastor Crone on creation, and that's a 10 DVD series. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And as things unfold, we hope what you'll be drawn closer to the Lord. If you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord, well, watch Pastor Billy Crone's videos, because he ends everyone with an invitation to come to know the Lord. And then, of course, please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. Bye-bye, and may the Lord be with you.
IRN USA Radio News.